We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
There's a high fly ball
from KMOX Sports.
That's hit deep to left field, and it's a gunner.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado. There's a moment for you.
Welcome to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And the driving jam time.
And the Billikens win this one.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
Comeback pattern caught. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Now, Sports Open Live on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, good to be with you. 7 o'clock hour on Friday night. We'll be catching up with Howard Richards in about 10 minutes. Howard is in Athens, Georgia, or somewhere near Athens, Georgia, because that's where Mizzou's playing tomorrow as they take on the number one team in the country, the Georgia Bulldogs. And it's a big point spread, man. 39.5, it's a big number. You could say a historic number. And we'll be talking a bit about the game itself, and of course, you know what's the right mindset, right? I mean, you know, nobody expects Mizzou to win this game. There's nobody that's going to say it's a disappointment if you lose, even if you get beat up. I mean, look, they're the best team in the country, but you do eventually, I would assume, have hopes of being good enough to play at that level, right? I mean, that's the plan. And I really liked what Eli Drinkwitz said about that this week, and look, you know, to a degree, it's what a coach has to say, but I liked the way that he put it. I liked his enthusiasm. Like, man, basically, this is what you do this for, right? I mean, you get into sports, you get into this kind of business to test yourself against the best and then to see, you know, how far you need to go. And I think it's important. I believe this at all levels of sports. I mean, I'm including kids, and I don't know about, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds. But I think once you get to be like a teenager, if you're serious about a sport, you're better off testing yourself. You're not better off being the big fish in a small pond. Not unless you just want to play recreationally. If that's the case, that's cool. Nothing wrong with that. You want to play with your friends, whatever, all of that's good. But if you're looking at it, you know, I want to play Major League Baseball someday, or if you're looking at it like Mizzou players, they want to play in the NFL someday, or they want to win the SEC East, or they want to win an SEC championship. I mean, look, you've got to face the teams that are that at that level so you can see the difference between them and you. And what can you do to make up that difference? Now, you're not going to make it up in a year or whatever. I mean, look, Georgia's really good, man. There might be two or three teams in the country that can handle them. You know, and I'm not even sure it's that, because this is a pretty thin year in college football, in my opinion. I don't think there are that many very good teams. And, you know, this is, you know, the kind of test and the kind of thing you got to go through as you're building a program. And that's exactly what's happening at Mizzou. And you're still relatively early in this, too. I mean, you know, I had some hopes for a little bit more this year, but I'm not overly disappointed in what I've seen, in part because you're still early in this process. And especially when you're coming off of the COVID year last year where you played nothing but conference games, and your extra games are like Alabama, you know, like you came off a difficult spot. You're coming into another spot this year where, you know, again, I think that there are things that can and should be better. I don't mean this as a get out of jail free card for everything that Mizzou does. And I know in talking to Howard Richards over the months that we've been talking about this year's team, he doesn't do that either. Nobody's going to give him a free pass. That's not the point. The point, though, is being realistic about where you are and where you're trying to get, because where you're trying to get to is where Georgia is right now. And look how long it took Kirby Smart to get his team to this position. And that's coming from Alabama, right? That's coming from being the defensive coordinator at Alabama. And that's coming from, you know, having all those recruiting connections and all that stuff going on from when you were with Coach Saban. And even for him, you know, and don't get me wrong, they've been good at Georgia since he's been there. But this is the first time they've been the team. When you looked at them and compared them to everybody else and said, no, no, this is the best team. This is the first time they've looked this good. And it takes a while to get the players. And, you know, obviously getting players is one part of it. Training them up is another part of it. You know, I think that, you know, this particular situation with Mizzou is not impossible. I mean, look, things aren't going great at Florida right now. There's some buzz about Dan Mullen maybe not being too thrilled with how it's going there. You know, Tennessee has still not taken the big jump, even though they have all you would think anyway, the alumni and the financial advantages of being an old-time school, but they haven't done it. Kentucky has taken a step. I mean, they might be the model program. They might be the one to pay attention to. You know, like this is the way that you can do it at Mizzou, because Kentucky was nothing for a long time. And it's taken Mark Stoops, a long time to get to the point where Kentucky is where they are right now, where they're at home and they're favored against Tennessee and they're a ranked team at 6-2 this deep into the season. Yeah, I mean, you know, this stuff is not going to be simple. It's going to be a challenging game tomorrow. It might get ugly. And, you know, I think that if you're a Mizzou fan, you probably should come to grips with that. And like, listen, I know what it's like to want your team to be better than it is. I do. You know, I mean, I grew up. I started to become a Miami fan probably in my early high school years, but then obviously went to school there. But in all the time that I followed them, the first 15 years, there was no program any better. Turning out Hall of Famers, winning national championships, being in the hunt every year from basically the early 80s until, you know, 2001, 2002. So they had a 20-year run with a little gap in there. There was a little gap in the mid-90s because of some violations that that happened in the athletic department with one of the advisors who was, crazy enough, selling Pell Grants to feed his cocaine habit, which is so Miami. It is so Miami. But I understand, though, that since then, I mean, I'm looking at my favorite program, and they're smack dab in the middle of the hottest recruiting talent base in the country. And I still see them underachieve, and I still see them fail to kind of raise themselves up. I know what it's like to be disappointed about that. And, you know, so I identify Mizzou. I get it, man. I think we all know that it's a lot more fun when your teams are competitive and winning. But this one might be a little bit on the tough side. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to catch up with Howard Richards coming up next. We're definitely going to talk a lot about the game, but I do also want to talk to him about his former coach, Warren Powers, who passed away this week as well. So talk about a whole bunch of good stuff. It's a great conversation every time we get a chance to have Howard Richards on the show. He's coming up next on KMOX. Friday night on Sports Open Line here on KMOX, and it's always a good night when I get a chance to visit with one of my favorites. One of my favorite guests is Howard Richards. Of course, Howard is the radio analyst for the Missouri Tigers, and they've got a big game tomorrow. And we're going to talk a bit about that, Howard. And by the way, you guys can find Howard on Twitter at @How_Rich. We're going to talk about that game coming up in a few minutes. But before I do that, I did want to flash back a couple days with the news of Warren Powers passing away this week. I know you've known him for a long time. And obviously, for the Missouri Tiger family, this was, you know, a significant loss.
Yeah, it's pretty much occupied, I think, a lot of my thoughts this week, just because I had such a great experience under Coach Powers for 3 seasons at Mizzou. And a lot of people know that I stayed as close as I could to him and Linda once he was diagnosed, and when I returned to St. Louis in 2010, he was diagnosed soon thereafter. And, you know, I just felt that for him, I think he needed and enjoyed, and Linda certainly supported him to have as much contact from friends as possible. along with Gus Otto and Suzanne Otto, who were probably their closest friends. You know, they were teammates at the Raiders. I stayed in touch as much as anyone else, but I did have a lot of communication with Linda Powers right up until she passed away in September as a result of a tragic glioblastoma brain tumor. And, you know, she wanted the best for Warren. I mean, she was truly a devoted spouse, a devoted wife for him, man. And, you know, I don't know that if ever remarried and had a spouse that, you know, cared as much for me as she did for him, I'd be one lucky guy.
It's such an interesting time frame, and it's, you know, it's a guy that played in the National Football League, the American Football League in the AFL before the two came together. What was that like being a college guy? I mean, I know you've known him for decades. What was it like, you know, playing for him, you know, back in that time, and you know, what was it like playing for somebody that had played the game too? You know, somebody that had been there.
I don't think I knew that he had played the game right away. I think it was probably several months later. That really had no effect on me. I know that there were a lot of guys that were, you know, of course, we were recruited by Al Onofrio, fired after my freshman season. And some guys were, you know, hesitant. They felt, I guess you may say, duped or double-crossed. And some guys thought about transferring it. And I think I and some others just said, you know, we're in a situation, you know, we don't have any control over it. Instead of transferring, let's give the staff a shot. I was impressed by him from his initial meeting with us. And essentially he came in and said, you know, we're going to be competitive. We're going to challenge for a Big Eight championship. We're going to try to position ourselves to win a national championship. We're going to be, you know, we're going to play with toughness and we'll never lose to Kansas. And so for the next three seasons that I played for him, you know, we beat the hell out of Kansas. And that, of course, winning some big games, you know, in his first season, beating Notre Dame at Notre Dame, the defending national champion, and then bookending the season at Nebraska. They were ranked number two, essentially knocking them out of the race for the national championship. So there were some tremendous wins, but we had a tremendous team. We had a great locker room. A lot of great guys that I'm still very close to this day. But Powers, I think, was just kind of an inspiring guy. You know, he motivated us and instilled that confidence in us to be as good as we wanted to be, as long as we worked hard for it. And I never felt that whenever I stepped on the football field when he was coaching that we were ever going to lose a game. I always felt that we could win a game.
You know, I've read a lot of people's thoughts on his career and his time there, and I feel like the common theme this week, Howard, has been that era was maybe better than people thought it was at the time. You know, when you know, you had what, 3 years finishing in the top 20-25, a bunch of bowl appearances in a row. What, won three out of four? I think three bowls in a 4 year span, something like that.
I think he in his 7 years as head coach, he went to five bowls, and we played in three straight. Mizzou had not been in a bowl game since 73,
right?
When he came in, so he brought legitimacy back to Mizzou football.
Well, I'm going to say just face-to-face, you know, sorry for your loss. You know, you've known the path and you've known what was coming, I'm sure, but, you know, it doesn't make it any less of a loss. So, you know, you have all of our condolences.
No, thank you. Thank you. And, you know, I'll just add this. There's something – I'm a spiritual person, and to me there is something spiritual about that whole marriage between Warren and Linda. Naturally, she passed away in late September, and, you know, we all knew that he would go sometime soon, but 6 weeks later, I think that was both God and Linda working. And she said she didn't want to be without him, and she came and got her man. And I'm happy for both of them. You know, his quality of life was nothing in the flesh in a nursing facility. So I'm glad he is moved on to glory.
That's a great way to put it, Howard. And again, you know, my condolences to you on your loss, and certainly to the rest of Missouri Tigers Nation. All right, we definitely have some football to talk about. In fact, coming up in a couple of minutes, we'll talk about Mizzou going down to Athens, Georgia. In fact, that's where Howard Richards is right now. He's down in Georgia getting ready for this game tomorrow, so it'll be Mizzou against the number one team in the country. We'll talk about that game coming up next on KMOX. We are continuing our conversation with Mizzou radio analyst Howard Richards. Always a good day when I get to have Howard on the show, and I appreciate your time today, Howard, very much. So especially, you know, on a travel day with you guys heading down to Georgia and everything, getting ready for tomorrow's game. So let's turn our attention to the game tomorrow. The number one team in the country packs a pretty good punch. Obviously, it's a game on the road. So how do we approach this one tomorrow? What are we thinking?
Well, let's just hope it's over in about 3 hours. let's hope there's a lot of running, you know, hopefully less by Georgia, more by Mizzou. But listen, you know, realistically speaking, it's a tough task for anyone, not just Missouri, facing this Georgia defense, which probably will go down at least through the first 2 months of the college football season as among the best defenses ever, you know, point totals, yards allowed, turnover margin, all that stuff. They're just a tremendously gifted team, especially on defense. They've got tremendous depth. They've got speed and athleticism at where it counts. They've got, you know, their defensive line is among the best. I'm just going to say they're the best right now in college football that I've seen. But here's the challenge. You play in a league like this. You play at the NFL level. Why? Because you want to be among the best. You want to consider yourselves among the best. So now tomorrow you get a chance to play the best. Anything less than max effort is unacceptable. So I can't imagine anyone stepping on the field wearing black and gold for Mizzou that won't be playing as hard as they possibly can. Now, those guys on the other side of the line of scrimmage, they're going to be playing as hard as they can too. They've got a lot at stake. Yeah. They want to remain number one. They want to position themselves as the top team going into the college football playoff. So there's that as well. But again, you just got to line up. You hope that you minimize mistakes. You hope that you have as few penalties as possible. You play with toughness and enthusiasm. If you do that, no matter how this game turns out, if you can look back and say, hey, I gave it my best shot, then I can accept that. I can accept that. And I think anyone can accept that. If you're overmatched from a talent perspective, that's just the way it is. You know, Missouri will have a lot, you know, a long way to catch up. But give credit to Eli Drinkwitz and his recruiting efforts. You still have to develop players, but you've got to recruit players. You've got to recruit for depth. And that's how you build your future. A lot of comparisons to Mark Stoops in the Kentucky program. I think it's, first of all, I'll say, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous for people to say that Eli Drinkwitz is on the hot seat going into next year. I mean, it's just, it's foolish. But if you look at what Kentucky has done and developed their program with Mark Stoops, I think he's in his ninth season there. He's 2-10 this first year. It took him a long time before they became even a 500 team. To date, Kentucky still has not won an SEC East championship. I don't know how many years Kentucky's been in the SEC, but Kentucky and a lot of other programs, include Texas A&M in the West that came in with Mizzou in 2012, they haven't won a division title. Last time I checked, Mizzou's won two. They won two in the first three seasons.
Yep.
So it's nonsense for people to say Missouri doesn't belong. That said, there has been a lull in the program of late. Eli was brought in to reverse the course of this program, build it, rebuild it, and make it a contender. And it takes a while to do that. And I just want people that understand football know exactly what I'm doing. They know that. For those that don't, that think they know, listen to these words. It's it takes a while. You have to build a program. You've got to get – the coach has to get his types of players in here. I want to read something, if you don't mind. I'm going to pull
up this quote.
There was a quote on ESPN. Give me a while. I'm going to get back to this because I got to turn my phone on. My battery was dying, but there was, I was reading something about Georgia and Georgia defense. And these words, you know, came directly from Kirby Smart, who was a defensive guru in his own right, former defensive coordinator at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking essentially about what it takes to build a winning defense. And essentially, while my phone's pulling up, essentially what he said was, scheme doesn't matter. So you hear people saying, oh, it's, you know, Coach Wilkes, you know, he's got to go. He's been a disaster and all this. You know, the real thing in all this, it's not about scheme. And I've been saying this, and you know, all season long, it's not about scheme. It's about talent. You've got to have the talent. And I'm pulling this up. Just give me a second here. I'm going to read this quote from Kirby Smart.
Sure.
He says, we know – one second. Come on. Act right, phone. He goes, we know what we're looking for in a player at every position, Smart said. The most important thing, though, is having good players, period. Don't let anyone kid you that it's about scheme or anything else, because with offenses being able to run it, pull it, or throw it all on the same play now, you better have players who can defend all areas of the grass. He just said it right there.
I mean, that's pretty much money right there, yeah.
All the experts that think it's about the defensive coaching staff and the scheme, it's not, people. Just pay attention to this. You know, the football people know. You cannot deny what Kirby Smart is saying. He's proven it year after year. He's probably built the best defense in recent years in all of college football.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So here's the kind of a philosophical question. If we can close on this, Howard. You know, there's two ways that teams can go when they're facing a highly ranked team, when they're playing up a weight class, however you want to put it. One is you're going to go out there and you're going to play like you're playing with house money. You know, you don't have anything to lose. You're not expected to win. Play loose, play fun. You know, obviously can't be, you know, too loose, but, you know, try not to let it all wear on you. The other way is be careful, you know, make sure that you're not going to make the extra mistake. And I know it's tough to balance those two things. Is there a preferred way to you to go about that kind of a matchup?
Well, I think it boils down to this. And you talked about those two ways. You can either wilt like a flower, mm-hmm. or you can go and play tomorrow's game and realize what you need to do to get better. And I'm not conceding that Missouri's going to win. I'm not saying they're going to lose or whatever the case may be.
Right.
We came here in 2013. I don't know mm-hmm. what the point spread was, but we walked away. Gary Pinkel's team walked away with a 41-26 victory.
Mm-hmm.
But against all odds, no one expected that to happen. Yet they did. Now, will they win tomorrow? Who knows? But the point is, if you play hard, again, I talked about this earlier, if you eliminate those mistakes, the mental errors, you play with toughness and aggressiveness, man, anything can happen. Georgia can get a key player or two hurt. They could turn the football over. Miracles do happen in football. Upsets happen. But that's the anatomy of a true upset, okay? That's how it happens. But you're not going to just go through the motions. I mean, if Missouri mm-hmm. comes out and does that, you know, it'll be a disaster all day long. And it'll be a bloodletting like you haven't seen before. That's what, in order to avoid it, though, they've got to do the things that we just talked about.
Looking forward to seeing how it plays out. And I, once again, thank you so much for doing this. I'm sure you've got a nice dinner planned in Athens tonight in advance of going to the ball game tomorrow. You have a favorite spot in Athens that you've been to or nah?
Actually, not, because we haven't spent a lot of time staying in it. We don't stay directly in Athens. We're actually in a little town called Braselton at a resort here called the Chateau Elan. So they've got a number of restaurants here. They got a nice Irish pub here. So we're gonna plant it here. I've got some friends in town from DC and from the Atlanta area. We're gonna get together and kick it and just have some fun, you know, and enjoy being together and we'll hope for the best tomorrow. We'll get on our knees and pray for Brazil and just hope for an interesting, at least a competitive matchup by the two teams.
No doubt. We're looking forward to it. And I know I mentioned it last time. once I get past this stupid COVID thing, we're going to grab a burger or something. I swear.
Absolutely, man.
I mean it, but I got to get doctor's clearance first.
Yes, you do that.
Howard, have fun tonight with your friends and family. And, of course, we'll look forward to doing this again sometime, and we'll be tuning into the game tomorrow.
Sounds good, Kevin. Thanks.
You got it. Howard Richards, he is the best, man. Such a good man. And obviously, you know, it's hard to be anything but realistic when you're looking at a big mismatch. I mean, you know, Vegas doesn't assign you as a 39.5-point underdog by accident, and it's not meant to be taken personally. And some of it is, you just know where the action's going to be on a game like that. It's always going to be on the public favorite, which is going to be the number one team in the country. Especially when you're not dealing with, you know, the opposite side being Notre Dame or somebody like that that carries a big betting backing of their own. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I'm not going to tell you that I'm that I'm optimistic, because I'm not. The game is definitely going to get out of hand. But I'll be curious to see how long you can hang. You know, how long can you make it interesting? And I don't know. Maybe it won't be. Maybe from right out of the get go, Georgia takes over and just does what they're going to do, and we'll see. But, I mean, you know, Illinois went to Penn State and won a couple of weeks ago. Now, it wasn't as big an upset as this would be. But, you know, shows you, though, that a significant upset against a ranked team can happen on the road just, you know, in a similar way. But, again, I would say this is a much bigger mismatch, and certainly Georgia is just that good. All right, stick around. We'll wrap it up with a little update on what's going on with the labor talks in Major League Baseball. I had a report on that this afternoon. Tell you all about that next up here on KMOX. All right, we're going to wind it down with a little baseball tonight. And it's not a massive update. Evan Drellick and Ken Rosenthal from The Athletic had a story that was updated about an hour ago. It went up earlier than that, but they had some updates to it about an hour ago, that the Players Association has made its second proposal on economics to the owners. And as you would imagine, sorry, this cough is killing me. As you would imagine, there's not been a lot of progress on this stuff yet. I mean, you know how this all works. I know the cliche. I've covered collective bargaining in sports going back to the mid-90s. I mean, it's been part of my entire radio career. You know, it's part of the deal. I understand the concept that deadlines create action. I just don't understand why it's such a... That's why it has to be such a push to the last minute kind of thing. I mean, these two sides both have an interest in getting this done. Now, it doesn't really matter if they lock out on December 1st. I mean, you know, that part is going to get, I don't want to say overblown, but it's going to get maybe headlines that aren't accurately reflecting what that actually means. The lockout on December 1st, it doesn't really change anything. The only time we need to be worried about this lockout is if it's going to disrupt the season. Or, you know, so as long as a lockout doesn't disrupt the season, I don't think it's that big of a deal. if it messes up the offseason, you know, as a fan, well, all right. I mean, I'll deal with that. I've dealt with some pretty messed up off seasons here recently because of COVID, so I can deal with another one of those. And look, the two sides are still kind of sticking to their guns on the primary things that they want, right? Owners want to lower the luxury tax threshold, which is kind of ridiculous, man, because nobody's at the current one. And to lower the threshold to $180 million is ludicrous, especially when you look at how much revenues are continuing to rise, especially once you get past all the COVID stuff that cost the industry billions of dollars. Going backward on the luxury tax is, I mean, I find that to be pretty insulting, to be honest with you. I mean, anybody that thinks going backward on that is in some way making progress is fooling themselves. Because even these big market teams eventually view that number as a soft cap. I mean, even the Yankees didn't want to stay over it, so they had to reset their penalties. And even though at the revenue levels that the Yankees and Dodgers are at, those penalties are meaningless. They're absolutely meaningless. We're talking about less than 1% of their team revenue. I don't understand why that is something. Now I get in negotiation, you're going to start with your best case, right? The players are doing the same thing. But I think we all understand that that doesn't make a lot of sense because that's already depressing the marketplace. And if you keep it at, if you put it at 180, especially with revenues continuing to go up, I mean, TV deals are getting bigger, guys. And that's something that came out of the World Series. That, you know, for all of the droning and whining that people do about baseball's dying and it's on too late and the games are too long and all of this other nonsense. Like, do you realize that the World Series games are the second highest rated television shows next to NFL broadcasts, right? So yeah, NFL rules, we all know that. And that's not really a problem. Like, that's just what it is. But when you have the second best television program, second highest rated television program in a given year, it tells you something. Because, like, you know, look, ratings are down in everything. They're down because people are cutting the cord. Fewer people watch in traditional ways, which means fewer people are being measured in traditional ways. This is not a complicated issue. I do think baseball has an issue that they need to sort through, and that is that I saw this tweet from somebody that worked in the secondary ticket marketplace earlier this week who said that one of the big concerns coming out of this past season was not tickets sold, but the tickets that were scanned, that they're just a really much smaller percentage of, than usual of tickets sold that were actually scanned. And that's clearly something that baseball wants to address. Now, again, I still think a lot of that is COVID. I think a lot of that is people still having some hesitation about being in crowds. And even if that's not all of those people, I mean, there's still a lot of people that lost a lot of money, man. You know, a lot of people that might have been, you know, in the market to grab secondary tickets, you know, tickets on the secondary market, day of game or whatever. I think there are people that are making the financial choice not to because they've had a rough year and a half. So, I mean, it's a combination of things, but it's still something that baseball's got to keep an eye on. I think that's an issue. But I think the biggest issue that baseball needs to make sure that they get under wraps is the competitiveness of all of their franchises. You can't make everybody try to win every year. I get it. Sometimes teams are just in a bad spot and they need to reset. But there should be a year's limit as far as how long your payroll can stay below a certain level. And at some point, you got to start trying to be better. You can't play this stupid cycle that Pittsburgh's been playing for the last 30 years. Well, we'll just have to wait and hope until we grow everything in our own system. And then, like, forget about it, man. All they end up doing is selling everybody the minute they start to make any money. And it's the same cycle over and over. And you want to know what will kill younger generations of fans is their teams being crappy for 10 or 15 or 20 years. That's when people move on. You can't go generation after generation of disappointing product and not getting people excited to go to your games. Like, you know, if you want to get, you know, people always like, how do you get young audience tuned in? You need to be good. Kids like winners. Bottom line, I mean, I know people in general like winners, right? I mean, what really makes a successful run for a team that gets hot is the bandwagon jumpers. You have all the diehards all the time, but those bandwagon jumpers bring all the extra cash to the party. But when you're talking about specifically growing younger generations, kids like winning teams. And if they grow up in a market like Pittsburgh, where the team is terrible their entire childhood, what makes you think they're going to buy tickets when they're adults? They have no attachment to that team. They have no reason to spend money on it. And I think that is the big issue that baseball needs to fix. And I think it's an owner's fixing owner's situation. I don't think this is something that the players can solve for the owners, and I don't think it's something that the owners can ask the players to fix for them. This is where the people that are, you know, if you're wealthy enough to own a team, then you should have the ability at some point to put a quality product out there. And if you can't, sell your team. Get somebody in there that has a little bit more revenue. Because there have been too many teams for too long that just fatten up on revenue sharing and keep their payroll super low And no matter how bad they are, you're insulated, right? Attendance doesn't even matter when you get all that revenue sharing money. If your payroll's below a certain amount, you're going to bank cash whether you sell tickets or not. It's too easy to be crappy in Major League Baseball right now. It's too profitable to be crappy. And I pick on Pittsburgh a lot, but I mean, we could pick on the Marlins. They've done this for decades. Yeah, they'll occasionally perk up here and there, but then they go right back to it. Major League Baseball needs to find a way to incentivize these teams that tend to drag at the bottom of the barrel for too long. And look, like, I don't care. Like, for example, if Tampa Bay isn't going to have a big payroll, but they're going to win, all right, you're winning. I mean, can't argue with success. That's ultimately what, you know, again, that's ultimately what builds a fan base, and especially when you talk about locking in young kids and getting them to be lifelong fans. You know, the more success, the better. And if that, I don't know that that's going to get fixed this offseason. I'm sure it won't, because there's too much incentive for too many of these owners to just take the money. And by the way, the top owners don't mind that, because then none of those teams are trying, which means the teams with the big pockets get all the good players and they get to win. So there's really no incentive at the ownership level to fix this. And that's the problem. But it's, to me, it's the single biggest problem with the sport long term. You've got to find a way to give fans something competitive, or you lose markets. You lose entire groups of people. You lose an entire generation. It's not as simple as do more outreach or what. Yeah, okay, do all that. But you know what? At some point, you got to give your customer a good product. And there's no more fickle fan of anything than kids. The minute you suck, they're done. They're like, all right, well, I got other things I'm going to root for. I'll root for another team. I'll root for my favorite player on another team. You know, social media makes that pretty easy. So if Major League Baseball is wise, that'll be on their list of things to fix. But I think they're more greedy than wise, so they probably won't. You guys have yourselves a great weekend. We'll catch you on Monday night here on Sports Open Line.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.